This is the Dog Days Podcast from UGASports.com. I'm your host, Dane Young, and this is the podcast where we chat with former Georgia Bulldogs about their eras in Athens. Really appreciate your support of this podcast. The more that you subscribe and rate and review and all the things that you do, whether it be on Apple or YouTube, Podbean, wherever you listen to your podcast, it helps us to be able to churn out more content like this. So if you want more UGA stories, please subscribe to us on YouTube. Georgia Bulldogs is the handle. If you search UGA Sports, you can find us there. Also, wherever you're listening to this, subscribe, rate, review, all those wonderful positive things. On this episode, we have Asher Allen, former defensive back for Georgia from the mid to late 2000s. Got a lot of great stories, including that Auburn blackout, where he was one of the few people who knew that that was coming before they rushed out of the tunnel. That story and more here on Dog Days. Asher Allen joining us here on the Dog Days podcast. Asher, you played for the Dogs from 2006 to 2008, but a lot of our fans might want to know what you're up to now, so why don't you just update Georgia fans of what's going on in the life of Asher Allen?
Yeah, man, a lot of fun things, good things. It's nice to be back. So I was in Minnesota for a while, and now we finally got out of the tundra and we came back home. So we have a little daughter, a little 10-month-old right now, so she's the pride of our life. And just relax. I was talking a little bit earlier over the phone. So the company that my company now is called Nutridyne, Nutridyne. So we work with chiropractors, we work with functional medicine practitioners, MDs, DOs, nurse practitioners, so people who are trying to deal with people naturally and holistically. So my company, we come up with protocols for those doctors and come up with different services so they can help patients, and we also make nutrition formulas for them as well. So so I'm back in Georgia now working with the doctors in this area and also Florida. I kind of skipped Gainesville on purpose, but everybody else gets some good attention. So yeah, with that and all of those things there, man, just kind of keeping us busy.
So you are probably very glad to be out of that cold weather of Minnesota. I'm not sure how you made it as long as you did, to be honest with you.
You know what? Winter is the worst, right? That's what everyone knows. It's like 6 months long and it's pretty tough, but it makes a man out of you. Once you do it like 2 or 3 years in a row, you kind of come up with things to do in the winter. But great people up there in Minnesota, great fans in Minnesota. And then summer, spring, fall, you probably won't find a better place. They call it God's country because it's just so beautiful out there, and fishing and hunting and things like that. So it's just a beautiful place for 6 months, but then you just got to make it through that 6 month winter. That's what kicks a lot of people out, like myself.
It's just the opposite of the Georgia summers. That's all it is.
That's it, man. There's no perfect place.
Let's go back to your youth a little bit. So, growing up in Tucker, playing football, were you a multi-sport kind of guy? Did you focus on football early? What was your journey to playing up into high school?
You know what? Yeah. So we went to Tucker Fitzgerald. It's a park off of Lawrenceville Highway. It's really a breeding ground. A lot of athletes came out of there who went to UGA, who went to play in Tennessee, who went to play Jabari Davis and Thomas Brown and Inky Williams. I mean, a lot of guys came out of that Tucker Fitzgerald, Tucker Park kind of upbringing. And played out there. Just one sport. You know, and Tucker is kind of, you know, you can play two sports, but really that Tucker area is a football breeding ground. So that's kind of what you do. And if you do another sport, it's track, just so you can get faster for football. So that's kind of the mindset of everybody out there. But so Tucker Lions, that was the name of the park ball team. And there's a lot of talent in that DeKalb County, you know, youth football league area. So a lot of, you get a chance to work on your skills at a young age.
When did you realize, hey, I'm a little bit better at this than a lot of the other people that I'm playing with?
Man, you know what? To be honest with you, man, it's just when I think I've always just been so fortunate just to play with high caliber athletes. I mean, on my team, I mean, it was just so many good players that, I mean, on many of my teams, I was just, you know, fortunate enough to be, you know, on the field when you really looked at the talent. So, but I would say, You know what? I think towards when we got like a higher poundage, so like 135 pound team and things like that. I think once you get to that, you know, you start to, I think you're like in the sixth grade, fifth grade, and then you start to kind of develop a little bit, you get a little taller. And I just think, you know, you started to score more touchdowns, you started to do those things, and you were able to do what you wanted to do out there. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, maybe there's something to this. But I've always, you know, played football just because I just enjoy it, and it's just fun. And, you know, the people that you get a chance to play with, the coaches, they just, you know, they make it so inviting. So, but yeah, no. I think later on I just started to score more touchdowns. You started to, you know, do more things that you saw on TV and said, man, that's pretty cool.
Did you have a favorite professional or college player that you looked at and said, I want to be like that guy?
Oh, Deion Sanders, man. Deion Sanders, Champ Bailey. Yeah, those two guys, man. That was pretty much it. Those two guys, and I'm trying to think who else.
I mean, there's no point in wasting just to go straight to the top of the best corners to ever play the game, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just, they caught your attention, and you know, when you see those guys play and Champ and all that stuff growing up in Georgia, you just heard that name, the Bailey family, you know, always. But then Deion, you know, he was always somebody who was always on TV, so you got a chance to look at him, and it's like, all right, you want to be the best, you gotta look at the best and try to emulate them. So, yeah, those two guys were always people who I just, you know, tried to do at least a quarter of what they do.
So take me into high school. So when did you become a starter at Tucker? When did you realize this may be a good avenue for you to actually turn football into something more than, you know, what you're enjoying doing on the field, but you can get an education, potentially play professionally? When do you see that happening?
You know what? So at Tucker, again, it's like a breeding, you know, school. So you go from, you know, Tucker Fitzgerald, you run similar plays, high school coaches are there, you know, you just kind of go into that next realm or next level, which is, you know, at Tucker High School. And so, we had an amazing team there. I mean, Thomas Brown, again, James Swinton, he went to Auburn, guys who played in the NFL, you know, were from that team as well, Dwayne Harris, and, you know, guys like that. I mean, so it was a really, really good team. I mean, a lot of the guys on that team went to a D1 or, you know, went to a college and stuff like that. So it was, really, really, really good team. But, yeah, I would say, you know, I started, you know, so my first year I broke my ankle in my ninth grade year. So I didn't play my whole ninth grade year. But after that, my sophomore year, I think I started my sophomore year. I think so. Or at least midway through the sophomore year, or for sure junior year. But, just got more rest. You know, obviously playing with guys who eventually went to the next level in college, and you just get better and better. And again, that whole Cass County area, I mean, I'm sure if you look it up, and players who played there and things like that, and even if it's not the Cavs, you know, you got Gwinnett next to us, all of those guys are just, that's just, you know, they're just a bunch of high-quality athletes. So I think when you started to, again, you start scoring more touchdowns, you start making more plays, you start to realize, wow, you know, your confidence gets boosted, and you realize, man, I can probably do this at the next level.
All right, so Tucker High School, you're playing with guys like Thomas Brown. You realize that things are going well. You said your 10th grade year. When do the college coaches start hovering around and start talking to you about, hey, come to our junior day, come check out our college? When are they focusing in on Asher Allen?
Man, good question. I'll probably say my junior year for sure. One good thing that Coach Ballard, he was our high school coach, and Coach Roman, and all the guys out there, they put us in a lot of camps. So we would go to like the Auburn camp, Furman camp. We would go to all these places and get in front of these coaches, and we would do like 7-on-7 camps. And that really got you in front of people. So we used to do a really, really good job at these different camps. And you got Dwayne throwing the ball to different people, and everyone's doing really, really well. And I think we just started to catch the eyes of people, and then they started to come. And again, Tucker High School already, you know, before us, they had years of, I mean, great teams and people going to the, you know, next level. So, you know, coaches kind of always stayed around in the area because of that. But, I would say, you know, kind of that junior year, we started to do a lot of camps, and, you know, we started to, you know, do really, really well out there. And and I think that started to catch the attention, started to get the letters and things like that, which is, you know, for a 17, 16-year-old, that's awesome. You know, you see these schools that you looked at TV, and now you're getting letters from them. So it was really, really a cool moment.
Well, and, you know, one thing about that, too, is that your recruitment precedes the mass social media area that we're in now. You were legitimately getting the letters in the mailbox. And that's not that long ago, but that's just how quick this stuff changes. Recruiting now, so much of the Photoshopped Instagram post or the Twitter feed, you know, how can they follow and do the direct message stuff? So in a way, that was a different world, what you experienced, than what current guys are experiencing.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Dane. You're calling me old. I appreciate it. No, I'm joking.
Hey, we're almost the same age, Asher, so if I'm calling you old,
like,
I'm calling myself old.
That was a different century. No. You know what? You're right, though. And that's so weird, because, like, now you see these guys, and they have, like, what is it called? Like, they have videos to say where they committed, and it's like a production, and it's like, you know, 8 minutes long. It's like, wow, yeah, we just got letters, and, you know, we just gave them a head nod. And that was pretty much
You put on a hat at a ceremony, and that was what everyone did.
That was big. So yeah, different era, but it was nice though. It's nice. You know, people would come, you know, different coaches would come to your house, or, you know, we would go visit different campuses and things like that. So that whole recruiting process was nice. And then I have my cousin, Maurice Richardson, he went to Notre Dame. So it was nice. We were the same age. He went to Westlake High School. And so we did a lot of our recruiting trips together and all that stuff together. So it was just fun, because at that time, you traveled. And like you said, it wasn't a social media era. So everything was in person, and, you know, all that stuff was a lot of fun.
Who was your primary recruiter at Georgia?
You know what? I had actually coached Smart before he left. So I think he was recruiting me for like a little hot minute, and then he went to Alabama. And then after that, I'm trying to remember. I think it was Coach G. I think that's who, Coach Garner. I think that's who recruited me.
Do you have any stories about Kirby Smart? I mean, that was his 1 year back at Georgia, like you said, before going to Alabama. What was he like? Because he was still a relatively young coach at the time.
Yeah, I think he was like a running back coach or something.
Yep.
So I think it was just letters. I don't really remember any intimate conversations or anything like that. But with Coach Gardner and Coach Rick and then Coach Martinez, those guys who were at Georgia during my time, yeah, they were definitely a lot of awesome stories. And once we saw Coach Rick, I mean, come on, you grew up in Georgia, you go to Tucker High School, you know, you kind of play the hard game, like, yeah, you know, let me think about it. But in the back of your mind, you know, you want to go to Georgia. I mean, that's just kind of what you grew up wanting to do your whole life. So it was, yeah, you know, you kind of went to these other schools, because I think LSU, Florida, some other schools that were on my final list. But when you can just drive up 78 and be there in an hour and play top-notch football, why not do that?
Do you have any funny recruiting stories or things that coaches said or tried to do to lure you to their school?
Man, well, you know, I committed to Georgia my junior year, so I think I skipped a lot of that stuff, and I became more of the guy who was trying to get people to come. But I'm trying to think. Nothing too crazy with the recruiting process. I think I kind of had my mind made up, and I kind of knew where I wanted to go. But we would still get tons of letters and, you know, things like that and stuff like that. But I'm trying to think. Nothing funny. Nothing too funny. It's just pretty. But again, it was a fun experience. Sorry, I can't give you a better answer than that.
No, you're good. Like, yeah. So if you turned into the recruiter of other recruits, I mean, you were the one pitching at that point. So rather than being recruited, they kind of felt good about Asher. They're like, who can he help us get now? Was there a particular couple guys that you locked in on and said, yeah, I'm going to work on you. I'm going to get you to join me in Athens.
Well, yeah, I think anybody I could talk to, I'll tell them that. But I'm trying to think, anyone in particular who we would go on. Yeah, I'm not sure. I just think whenever I had a chance to talk about it on the media, whatever the case may be, I was obviously real positive. You don't have to force anyone to do that, because it's all positive. But because what happened was me, Chris Durham, Staff, Ricardo, Crawford, Kevin Perez, and there may be one more if I'm forgetting, my bad, but we all came in early. So we actually came in and started practicing with the team during like the West Virginia bowl game when Tim Jennings and all of them were on the team. So I just say that to say that, you know, when it came to recruiting, we, especially those guys, I mind you, I made up like, you know, as soon as like February 2nd hit after signing day and we were eligible, I mean, we declared and, you know, we just started getting ready for our next level. So, yeah.
What was that first spring like? I mean, I hear a lot of players say that, like, you think you know what football is, and then you step onto an SEC caliber practice squad or, you know, a spring camp, and then you realize, yeah, that this is a different level.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, and then you realize, like, in high school, you're taught the technique, but, you know, the coaches know what they're doing, but they're trying to talk to, you know, 17, 16-year-olds. Sometimes you can't process what they're saying, and I never forget. I was pressed. I think it was Harris. I was guarding, but I was pressed. And he did like a 19-16. He did like a comeback route, and like I was pressed, and I literally like backpedaled 19 yards, and then broke on the ball. And long story short, that's just like horrible technique. That's just. But you don't know anything. But that's kind of what spring is like for your first year, for your, you know, your freshman. You're just like, you don't understand technique. But you know you're fast, and you know you have a motor, and you know you have the will to win. So those are the, you know, three ingredients that coaches can work with. If you don't have that, then, you know, you can be whatever you want to be. But if you don't want to win, you know, you're kind of not really useful. But yeah, those were the guys are bigger. I mean, you've seen these linemen, they're like casting shadows over you. And you're like, who are these people? And you're, you know, 5'9", 180. Trying to figure out how's this gonna work out, but yeah, that was everyone's fast. You know, you see these, you know, these athletes out there and stuff like that, and people that you knew, you know, growing up and things like that. So, but again, for an athlete who's, you know, that you just, there's nothing better than that, because it's nothing but opportunity to get better. So it's a lot of fun. But yeah, that spring, I mean, it's a lot of Asher, where are you going, or son, what are you doing, and you know, get your technique right and all that stuff. But that's what you're there for, just to get all that stuff out and make all those mistakes so that, you know, when the season starts, you can at least make less mistakes.
Well, whatever happened that spring, it worked well because you played a lot your freshman season. What do you remember about that 06 season? And then just, I guess, maybe how you grew, because you were relied upon pretty early in your Georgia tenure.
Yeah, man. No. That was awesome. That was, you know, that was really nice. Yeah, for Coach Rick and Martinez and all the guys, just to put a lot of faith in me early on. Because I think, I played my first game out there. We were at nickel, and I think we did kick return, punt return. I think all those things. And again, I wish everyone could have that experience of stepping on Sanford Stadium and looking up and hearing 94,000, and you're just this little, you know, 19-year-old, 18-year-old. And it's kind of a surreal thing to be doing. But again, like we kind of talked about, you know, you're working your tail off in spring. You don't know what you're doing, but you know that you got the goods. You're convinced of that. No one can tell you anything else. And you just go out there and you just give it your best. And when they put your name out there, it's like, hey, when I'm between the lines, you know, you might as well give it your best. Because if you don't, you know, you're gonna end up getting hurt. So you go out there and you do your best. And I've always been I wasn't the fastest, not the strongest, not, you know, all that stuff, but I always prided myself on doing the right thing and trying my best to do the right thing and watching tons of film and things like that. So it was nice that all of those things, you know, worked out early on. And we had guys like Trey Battle, Paul Oliver, who were just, you mean, just amazing players. And I'm sure Thomas Flowers, I'm sure I'm leaving out some people, but I mean, these guys were, I mean, just amazing, especially P.O. I mean, P.O. was, I mean, he was just an amazing corner. So just to be in that same film room and looking at those guys and watching them play, and you just can't help but to learn and say, oh, okay, that's how you play SEC football. You know, I remember the Georgia Tech game, he was against Calvin Johnson. I saw how he played him. I was just like, man, I mean, I forgot I was, you know, playing. I would have took a seat and just watched that matchup, because that was just fun to watch two high caliber players.
People forget that Paul Oliver shut down Calvin Johnson against Georgia Tech, man. And that was a prolific offense. And obviously, he was one of the best receivers really to ever play the game. And it was a clinic that day. You're absolutely right.
Oh man, it was a clinic. That's the only word to describe it. So, and Paul was, I did a lot of press coverage, and that's because, you know, I look at Paul a lot. And you saw what he did. He had one of the best press techniques. I mean, if people would really sit down and look at his film, and you look at his press technique, it's like, just take a Saturday, get some lemonade, get on your porch, and just watch his film. I mean, it's really, it's, you know, you can't find it on Netflix.
It sounds like it's a work of art in your eyes.
Oh man, yeah. Paul's press coverage was excellent. But yeah, all those guys are just so good. And Trey Battle, I mean, he's like a little, he's like 5'6", 120, but no one wanted to get in front of him. There wasn't a guy with a higher motor. And I remember, I think my first year, he had like 4 picks against Auburn or 3 picks against Auburn. It was like, wow. So again, my first year, we played early, but we had so many great Georgia greats that I hope people remember that did a lot for Georgia and helped other generations.
You know, one of the stories from that 2006 season that has kind of become a legend is that was NoShawn Moreno's redshirted season. So he was on the practice squad. But the legend is that he was absolutely carving up Georgia's defense in practice. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think that was I think that's when he had braids. That was cornrow NoShawn. That's like when he had the braids. Yeah, he was. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, so he got redshirted, but NoShawn's always been a high energy, high motor. You know, he'll get tackled, he'll run back to the huddle. But that was him in practice, and it didn't turn off. That was who he was. So yeah, I remember. I think he played like Virginia Tech or in the bowl game, or we were playing somebody, but he, he just gave us, I think he was like, who was the receiver's name? Eddie something that they had at Virginia Tech.
Eddie Royal.
Eddie Royal. So I think he like played Eddie Royal. He was just, he was, and then, like the scout guy is supposed to, calm down and stuff. No, he was trucking people. He was just, he was doing everything. So yeah, that's just how he was. So yeah, that's not a legend. That's a fact. He took his redshirt year and did it like he should have. And I think also, who else got redshirted? Rashad Jones, I think he got redshirted that year too. But again, all those guys practiced so hard and really took advantage of that redshirt year.
So let's pop into 2007, because it sounds like that you kind of had the inkling after seeing some of the practice squad that year and then some of the growth that your class made and just really how Georgia finished 2006, that there could be some special happening there. So when in 2007 does it click? Because, you have that early loss to South Carolina. Does it take the overtime win against Alabama for you guys to realize, we can really do this?
Yeah, that was awesome. That was an amazing just year, because I'm trying to think because then we have Cherishinsky. Sorry for being super casual on the interview, but
no, you're good. It started with him, and then it ends up with Stafford. Really short.
And then Staff took over.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Then Staff took over. I think he took over that South Carolina. It was like early, I think. But that 2007 year was nice. I think we started off with Oklahoma State, and and I think they were kind of the young gunner. I mean, they were kind of, I think this was like pre-Des Bryant, but, they were still, they had a quarterback that was kind of mobile and things like that. So we won that one. And then, that Alabama game, I think that was the game that for the next 3 years made our class say, okay, we got the goods. But that was you're going to Alabama. It was an early Saban era, but they were still good. They were great. I think Coffey was the running back, and, they had a number 22. I forget his name, but number 22, I think, was a receiver. And he was, he was the kind of the guy at that time. And, for all of us young guys out there, I think Prince was playing the other side. And, I think Rashad Jones he started playing that game and made some great down the field plays. I think it was like a deep play. He came from the other hash and broke it up and stuff like that. And then obviously the play everyone remembers, that, you know, that play action to Mikey. I mean, that was just, I mean, so once, I think once that happened, then you go back and you're like, okay, we can do this.
When Mikey Henderson catches that ball in the end zone, Georgia wins because Alabama had kicked a field goal the possession prior. What's that sideline like? How do you guys react?
Oh, man, it's a bunch of, what just happened? Helmets in the air, trying not to get hit by them. But, you know, you're just like, what is going on? And then, you know, games like that, you got Coach Fab dancing. And unfortunately, you guys may not know what Coach Fab dancing looks like. That's kind of a... That's the icing on the cake when Coach Fab starts dancing in the locker room. But yeah, that was a big game, and I think from then on, and I think we've kind of been talking about it, you know, in park ball, high school, you kind of realize, okay, I got this, you know, I can do this. I think for, you know, our class, or I'll just speak for myself. I think when that happened, because I think I was playing cornerback on that game, and so had a chance to, you know. That's big SEC football, man. I think it was a night game, and you're going to get the top receiver. What you going to do? So I think that was a really, really big game, just to build that confidence to say, okay, we can do this. It's not a theory. We can do it. We did it. So let's just keep doing that.
So that season builds up to the game against Auburn, and the legend that I've heard is that none of you guys knew about the black jerseys until the lights come back on in the locker room. What happened from your perspective to unveil the black jersey concept? Was it a rumor going around beforehand, or did they just spring it on you?
You know what? Because I was a captain that game. So I think we knew it because we were out there with our red jerseys on, but the captains had the black jersey on underneath it. So we knew it. So that was kind of cool because I remember we went out there and the whole team was inside. So the captains were outside, but the whole team were inside. And I think we just, you know, we were kind of doing the handshake and the coin toss, but we're doing it in our red jerseys. You know, we got our black jerseys underneath. And man, when we got done with that toss, and then I think I still remember Brian Evans, number three, coming out there with that black jersey on, like just screaming. I mean, when that happened and we took our jerseys off, it was like, this is going to be a special game. And that was, I think defense-wise, I think our first play was a pick. I think our first play was a pick. I think we ran a quarter half. So in the short, we were in cover two in the short. And I think Keelan Johnson picked that off. And we took care of the tight end on that play. Kind of capped them off, and then that was just a special game. And then that was the emergence of Rennie Curran. You know, he comes out of the ground and emerges, and they're like, who is this, you know, guy who can do everything?
And, I love how you describe that. He just comes out of the ground, like Rennie Curran just emerged from the earth to tackle.
Yeah, it's like, okay. Yeah, it's like, all right. I mean, even the guys on the, you know, it's like, whoa, you know, you knew Rennie was a high motor guy, but that game, it was like, he's tackling guys twice his size, and stuff like that. So that was an amazing game. But that whole game, I mean, that was just a special night, special day. I mean, after the game, Athens was just, you know, buzzing just for a week and a half. It was a ton of fun. And that's a memory that my era, you know, you just never forget. You know, you get a chance to wear the black jersey, you see, you know, you remember seeing pictures of Hines Ward's 19 in a black jersey and all that stuff. So it was nice. It was super awesome to be a part of that.
I mean, I still think a lot of people say that that's the loudest that Sanford Stadium has ever been is when you guys come out of that tunnel.
Man, I will agree with you. That was the loudest, I think I've ever heard. That game in itself, man, should be played like once a year for like, every year. I mean, that was just an awesome game. And how we played that game, I think we were dancing on the sideline at Soldier Boy, so that was just coming out. So that was, I think, when you watch the TV version of it, the commentators were dancing. I mean, everybody was just having a good time. I mean, that's Sanford Stadium night game, black jerseys, dancing, winning. I mean, that's just a nice combo.
So you had the jersey on underneath. You knew it before some of the other guys on the team. When was the first time that they told you, hey, we're doing this?
Ah, man, great question. It may have been, you know what I think, and you could talk to someone else and maybe it wasn't right, but if you, I remember, I think we just walked in. I think we walked in and we saw black jerseys in our locker room and everyone's like, huh? Because Coach Rigg was real slick. You know, he's quiet and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, he did things with style. So I don't think we knew about it. But then once we did know about it, I think we warmed up in red jerseys. I think we did our practice, you know, our stretches in red jerseys. And I think we went inside, everyone switched it out. And then we came out in red jerseys, the captains. And then once everyone came out in the black jerseys, then we switched ours on the sideline. But I think once the black jerseys came on and we were out there, I think everyone knew that was going to be a good game. That was just, yeah.
You can't deny that kind of energy. And people can say what they want to about the jersey debate or whatever. At that time, at that moment, it was so the right thing to do. Obviously, the next year against Alabama didn't work out as well. A jersey doesn't make a football player. But in that day, you know, the jersey helped the atmosphere. And you see that jersey being used with recruits now. I think there's a large sector of the fan base that would like that jersey to be worn, you know, once a year, maybe all the night games, whatever it may be, just because, you know, black is one of the university's colors and one of the team's colors. And because of that game in 2007, it's got such a special history, not only for your era, but just what that left on UGA.
And it was nice because I think it was a long time since we wore black jerseys. So it was just, I think for everybody, it was just like, what is going on? But yeah, I think that'd be a cool idea once a season, wear that. And so, that was a special year. Yeah, we beat Florida that year, which was awesome. That was a big game, you know. So you had Alabama, you had Florida, you had Auburn, all of that. And this was, man, I hate this. This was all pre-playoffs. If we had the playoff system, we would have won it that year. 2007 was the year we won the national championship. No, there's not a doubt in my mind. That was during the BCS, and so we had to go to, you know, we had to play those Hawaii guys. But
I think Hawaii would agree with you based on that game. Yeah. I think that they would agree.
Oh, man. If we would have, if they said the top four, not this computer and some weird, you know, off-site area that no one knows what this computer is, but you print out a number to determine your whole season. It's like, come on, man. So it was, that year, if we had the playoff system, we would have won the whole thing because we would have been a top four team and we were just hitting on all cylinders.
You did get to wear the black jerseys again just a few weeks later in that game against Hawaii. Leading up to that, I mean, it was pretty obvious on tape, I think, that Georgia was physically superior to Hawaii, but leading up, all the hype was around Hawaii's passing game and could Georgia's defense, you guys, stop them? And then absolutely you did. What was mindset, game plan, whatever it is that you had going into that game, understanding that nationally a lot of people favored Hawaii to really, you know, almost dunk on you guys in the secondary?
Exactly. Yeah, they were scoring like 1,000 points a quarter in their conference. And I don't even know what the conference was, but that it's like Colt Brennan, Bess, I think he played for the Dolphins, but some of their other guys, I mean, on film, I mean, I remember looking at this on film, I'm like, man, it was like the, you know, greatest show on turf. It was like the St. Louis Rams, like Kurt Warner days. I was like, man, these guys are just nickel and diming. I mean, they're doing this, they're going deep. You know, they got a man side to the spread. They got a zone side. Colt Brennan's just back there orchestrating the whole thing. So on film, it was like that. But, and I think we knew their defense probably weren't ready for our offense. So we knew that because of who they go against. And you got Noshon, TB, and then you got, you know, all these other guys coming at you. I don't think we knew that wasn't going to be the case, but I think it was a defense and what are we going to do? And I think once we came out there and Howard,
Marcus Howard.
Once Marcus Howard, I mean, he needed a leash and a dog chain, because he was, I mean, we needed to hold him back, because he just, I mean, that pressure, I mean, Rod Battle, Geno, Cade Weston, I mean, all these guys, they were putting so much pressure on him. He's throwing off his back foot. He's throwing, you know, he's right-handed. He's running to his left, and he's throwing. He's all this stuff. I mean, you got Rennie and Nell and all these guys just putting pressure and blitzing. And I think once that happened, and I think as a secondary, our whole goal was to get physical with them, because if you play off on a group of people who what they do is pass, then, you know, they're just going to, you know, you may give them a leeway or something that they can do good. But, yeah, we just want to be physical with them, press them. I think Prince got a pick. Our whole team got a few interceptions as well. And again, that was a beatdown. This is what it is. That was a beatdown. But again, that year, that 2007 year, I mean, you get a group of people who were on that team, and we're all just sitting around the table. I mean, that was a championship team. Obviously, you should win the championship every year, no matter what system you're in. But if we had the playoff system, we would have been in there, and we would have took care of business, because we were hitting on all phases of the game. Good. It was just good energy. The team's good. So that was a special year, 2007. I think we finished like number one going into the next year or something like that.
Yeah, the preseason polls for 2008 had Georgia ranked number one. Everybody was talking about Stafford and Marino and how great the offense was. Did you guys feel that energy and that pressure? I mean, you had the number one in the polls, the Sports Illustrated covers, all of that stuff. I mean, when Georgia played Alabama, you know, that next year, Georgia was favored. And Georgia, that was supposed to be the extension of the special year. Before that 2008 season, what was that pressure like?
It was, you know what? I would say there was a lot more press, and you could feel that you were number one. I don't think it was different, because again, we're a big school. Georgia's not, you know, this is big time football, so we're used to media, you know, stuff like that. But you could see just a little increase in the attention for us. I'll never understand it. I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, we won our first game and we went to number two. I'm like, what is that?
You guys won your first four games that year.
Yeah, and you get to number two. It's like, I guess that's just something that irritated me all these years. But
little stuff like that is one reason that they instituted the playoff, and why some people think preseason polls are meaningless anyway. Because what are you really proving? Because the team changes so much from year to year.
Exactly. Yeah. That computer. I don't know where the computer's at, but it should be gone somewhere. But like you said, that Alabama game, I think that was, you know, when the emergence of Julio, so he came out that game, and I think we were all super hyped for that game. I don't think anybody would tell you that we weren't prepared, we weren't ready. But again, I think it was, I don't know, I think they got us with like two touchdowns or something like that. But that was a game that we wish we'd probably get back in. We could do a whole lot better, but but that year was also just a really, really nice year. I think a lot of us left to go to the NFL after this year, but it was still a very special year that we had there. I'm trying to remember if there was anything else that year.
What went into that decision for you? Because you were one of the guys that left early to go to the NFL. And all the quotes at the time, you know, it's a family decision. It's all the things that we always hear. What went into that decision for you to go try your hand at the NFL?
You know what? Again, you know, you kind of test the waters, right? So you kind of look at what's going on. And I think all said and done, I had like a second round grade. And so I looked at that and I said, all right, you know, do you come back, make it better? Or do you, you know, do you leave now and kind of, you know, cash the check while it's in your hand, right? So that, you know, that's kind of and make the go, you know. You never know what can happen, right? You can always come back your senior year, you know, hurt something, even though you don't live your life like that, but you can come back and hurt something, and now you're, you know, whatever, because people may believe in the hype. Obviously, you got to show out that next year just to get back to that position. So I think for me, it was a combination of that, combination of just, feeling like you're ready. Definitely very, very difficult the decision. I think that was not easy to, you know, tell Coach Rick that you're going to leave, especially with such a special team and some of your guys there. But I think for me, it was just the best decision. And it definitely was. Definitely was the best decision for me.
I mean, if you're a second-round pick grade, you're getting told, hey, you've got a chance here at generational wealth. And anyone that says that, you know, I don't care how much you love the college or the school that you play for, if somebody's telling you that to your face, you're going to consider it at the minimum. And I think people are more understanding of that now. But, you know, definitely even eras before yours, a lot of people didn't understand how much goes into that decision. And then not to mention, you know, you're young in your 20s. Like, that's difficult to process everything that's happening in such a short amount of time. So it's difficult.
Yeah, no, it is. But again, like you said, you know, I think towards the end of your career in football or in college football, you start to understand this thing called business. And you're like, whoa, you know, I think there your whole life you've been playing sports just because you love it. But then there becomes a point where, you know, you start to become 20, 21, you start thinking, all right, well, I got to make decisions to kind of, you know, take care of yourself in the future. So that starts to creep in, and you just have to make the best decision for you.
Now, that said, I do hear a lot of college players say that even after they played in the NFL, that college football was their favorite, that there was something about playing college that was just different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, by far. College football was like, and again, I mean, even with the NFL, I still have some, you know, really, really great people that you still see from time to time. But, you know, your college team, because you were roommates and you were in the same class together and you went to workouts together. So you saw everybody all the time. You went to the movies together, whatever the case may be. So you were really a lot closer. And so, you know, for me, definitely being at Georgia, that was definitely the highlight of my playing career.
I got a couple of quick questions for you, then I got to get you out of here because you got business to handle. So who was your funniest teammate?
Good question. Funniest?
And don't say Asher Allen. Don't say you were the funniest guy on the team.
Oh, no. So I'm trying to think during the time in the roster. Well, yeah, so CJ Bird, he was funny. He was always singing and doing parodies and stuff like that. Brian Evans, he was super funny. He was always doing impersonations and stuff like that. Jeff Owens was super funny. I'm trying to think who else. The funniest? I think the whole DB crew was fun. I think as a composite person, I just think I'm gonna just put them all together as one guy. But yeah, the whole DB, our defensive crew was just super funny. You know what? I'm gonna take this all back. Rod Battle. Rod.
Okay.
He was the funniest dude. He was funny, man. He was. You never knew what he was gonna do. So. Yeah, you always had to keep your eye out for him, whether it was you just didn't know what he was going to do on the field, off the field, in class. That dude was Rob Battle. I said he was the funniest guy.
Which guy talked the most junk? Who was the biggest trash talker?
Wow, the most
Because it's always receivers and DBs, right? They're always the ones that are talking out there.
Yeah, I would say us. Yeah, we're definitely. Yeah, we got some good. I mean, we used to try to start the game every game looking for, you know, somebody who we can just get on and just stay on them the whole time. And as soon as you drop the pass, we're like, you know, you're not going to get the ball again. Come on, man. You need to play DB. We don't catch the ball over here. You need to come over here, you know, start tackling. So, you would do stuff like that. So, but the biggest trash talker who would just be like, man, let me not. Definitely the DBs were, as a crew, we were going back and forth. That was part of the game.
I bet it was Keelan Johnson. You don't have to say it. I bet it was Keelan.
Oh, man, how did you forget that?
I did a little radio with Keelan back in the day. I could just see it happening.
Oh, okay, never mind. Just erase everything I had to say. Yeah, Keelan was out there talking. Keelan was, but he was a pulse of the DBs out there. You know, He definitely gave us energy and direction and stuff like that. So he was But yeah, I would say Keelan. Yeah, Keelan was out there making noise.
What was the most impressive play you ever saw a teammate make in practice or game, either one?
Most impressive play. Let me think.
Now you had Stafford, so you know Stafford had that world class arm. It could be a pass you saw from the sideline.
He did amazing things. Man, that's a really, really good one. I'm gonna say most impressive play. It's probably gotta be AJ Green. I think that Arizona State game, he made some catches that was just like, what? Like, did he just do that? So I'll probably say AJ probably. Yeah, his catches and his hands and things like that. That was really amazing. You know, Sean, he was jumping over people, but we saw that all the time.
Man,
I think everybody else was amazed. We used to see that all the time.
As a DB, you must have hated practicing against AJ because that guy was crazy.
But you know what, man? He's crazy. Yeah, AJ and Muhammad Massacre and Mikey Henderson was in the slot. He was quick with everything. And then you got, you know, all these other guys, you know, Staff and all those guys throwing the ball. So it was, but again, what was nice about our generation was that a lot of the guys went to the NFL. I'm sure if you look at our lineup, you know, they you know, spent some period in the NFL. So the quality of our practices were just, I mean, it was amazing. And we didn't even know it. I mean, we just thought every team is like this. But the quality of players, I mean, you got Noshon, you got Gino, you got, you know, all these guys who are just, you know, NFLers, and we're all just, you know, drinking lemonade afterwards and, you know, eating Cheetos and stuff like that. So it's, you know, you don't realize, you know, how good you were until you went to the next level. You see these guys perform how they are. But, yeah, there's probably a ton of plays. But I'll probably say I'm thinking of Rashad. I mean, Rashad would make picks and plays that you'd just be like, that was crazy. You see Rennie making plays that were crazy. You would see Gino just move, you know, a nose tackle into the back, you know, and just hit the run. I mean, you just see things all the time. That was crazy. But, yeah, sorry about that. I'm trying to think of one play, but I guess just
the whole collective. Yeah. Last one for you. Do you keep track of the current dogs? And then do you want to have, like, do you want to put on your analyst hat and give your perspective on 2019 UGA football?
Yeah, you know what, man? I'll be honest with you. I think I'm a big fan of Jake Farm, Jake from State Farm. I'm a big fan of that guy. He's, I think he's beat out a ton of people. You know, Jacob Eason comes in there. Here comes Jake Farm. And then the quarterback before him who transferred, he, you know, number one, he was there. And then here comes Jake Farm. He's still there. So, I mean, that guy's got the goods, man. I think there may be other quarterbacks, maybe 6'4", 220, and all this stuff. But the guy's a winner. Obviously, he has intangibles that, you know, we don't see as fans just looking on TV. But in the locker room, on the field, he's obviously doing things that are amazing. So I'm a big fan of him. His third year, it should be clicking. You know, his third year, he should really – I think he's going to have a great year. Swift is amazing. I mean, Swift has – he's got the agility of Noshon, but he's got, like, the speed of, like, Mikey Henderson. I mean, the guy is fast. He's got tree trunks for legs, but he can move with it. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. And then number two, man, he's got to represent for the jersey, man. So the count. I think he has great energy. He reminds me a lot of Trey Battle. Trey Battle used to just run everywhere. And so you see him on the field just running all the time. But long story short, I think Georgia's thing has always been, you know, you got great players, but I think this team here looks good to the point where I think they'll put it together and make another win. I mean, you think about Jake Fromm, what he's done the last 3 years. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, national championships, SEC championships. So I definitely see in his third year, he's going to put it all together.
Well, Asher, this has been a delight, and I appreciate the time that you made for us here on the Dog Days podcast. And maybe we'll catch up again sometime soon. If you're in Athens, let us know.
Okay, my man. Thank you so much, Ben.
Big thanks to Asher Allen for joining us here on the Dog Days podcast. If you're a former player listening to this, I know it's getting around into those circles. Hit me up on Twitter if you want to join us at Dane Young, DaneYoung. Also, if you're a business owner or no one that thinks I want to reach a few thousand Georgia Bulldogs every week, well, this is a good space for that advertisement. On Twitter, hit me up at Dane Young, DaneYoung, and we can make that happen. Thanks for listening to the Dog Days podcast.